Today's episode of Hacker Public Radio is brought to you by snot in your food on purpose. Ew. It's the middle of May 2014, and still in accordance with the prophecy, Hacker Public Radio needs shows again. Hey, that means I can probably get away with pushing any old crap I may have recorded on you listeners, and there's nothing you can do about it! This episode isn't actually a nefarious plot to torment you all, but this does seem like a good excuse for me to dust off an old concept I recorded a few episodes for half a decade ago, and see how you like it. Back around 2007-2008 or so, not long after I managed to finish my 20-year-long four-year degree in microbiology, I found myself getting disgusted with news reporting on scientific subjects. They seemed to be all vague, sensationalist stories that were obviously just retouched press releases from some university public relations department, and almost never actually gave a reference to the actual study they were embellishing from so you could see what was really going on and why and how they did it. As someone nerdy enough that I still occasionally read scientific papers for fun, this has always annoyed the friggin' heck out of me. It was actually news stories about a scientific study, which the reporting flippantly described as showing that babies understand dog language, that prompted me to start recording, since, as my pseudonym on the internet might suggest, it intersects with a casual interest of mine. A bit of trivia about me that you probably don't care about, but which I'll tell you anyway, is that I tend to get along very well with dogs, and at one point I considered studying to become a veterinary behaviorist, and that's why my pseudonym is a dog philosophy pun. I ended up recording about 4 episodes of varying quality over the next couple of years, calling the concept stir-fried stochasticity. The idea was that I'd hunt down an actual scientific publication rather than a press release, and do a show describing exactly what the researchers were actually testing and the actual methods they used, and what their own scientific report of their results said, described in a way that would hopefully be comprehensible to at least anyone who paid attention in high school and was reasonably literate, even if they weren't particularly scientifically inclined. My preference was also to either hunt down the original paper for a currently hyped science so-called news story, or better still, to find completely ordinary papers with useful information that nonetheless don't actually get reported because they're not full of lasers and cancer and specks showing up on radio telescopes that totally could be a planet full of space aliens, you guys, we swear. The episode that I'm recycling for today is one of these latter useful ordinary science papers, and was the second one that I recorded. I don't think any of the recordings were ever heard by more than 4 or 5 people, though, so today's Hacker Public Radio is almost like a completely new show. Please give it a listen, and if you have a chance, comment somewhere and let me know if this particular type of show would be of interest as a repeat feature. Okay, ready? Here we go, then. I have a thrill-packed, mind-blowing, laugh-a-minute paper for you today about snot. Germ-infected snot, no less. For food. Well, okay, not really snot. Today's paper is W.K. Ding and N.P. Shaw's Effect of Various Encapsulating Materials on the Stability of Probiotic Bacteria, found in the March 2009, Volume 74, Number 2 edition of The Journal of Food Science. For those of us who went to public school, the title means the authors are testing different types of snot to see which kinds might help bacteria survive longer. Specifically, they want to see how bacteria might be protected while being eaten and sent through the harsh, bacteria-killing environment of your guts. Probiotic bacteria are our friends. The hypothesis is that by having a large population of friendly bacteria living in your guts, it's a lot harder for unfriendly, disease-causing bugs to move in. I should clarify, this isn't the hypothesis that the authors are actually testing here, just a description. Probiotic bacteria help us digest food, and some even make vitamins for us. This is why marketers like to emphasize the live and active cultures aspect of many brands of yogurt, which might help supplement your gut's population of friendly bacteria. But there's a problem. Your guts are not really very nice to bacteria. Your stomach is full of hydrochloric acid and tends to kill off potentially friendly bacteria, And then anything that manages to survive that has to deal with bile from your gallbladder, which also tends to kill off probiotic bacteria. Although a few bacterial cells are likely to survive, it takes more than a few to influence the makeup of your intestine's resident microbes. That's where the study comes in. What I've been facetiously referring to as snot because of their slimy textures are really just a selection of common thickening ingredients used in food, whose names you might recognize if you've ever looked at the ingredients listed on your food's labels. Specifically, the authors have taken alginate, guar gum, xanthan gum, locust bean gum, and carrageenan. They've mixed each with several different types of bacteria used in yogurt and similar products, and then turned the bacteria-loaded slime into tiny congealed beads. Then they soaked each sample of these, which I can't resist calling bio-boogers, in simulated stomach acid and simulated bile for 2 hours each, while they watched to see how fast the bacteria in the little bio-boogers were killed off in the process. These gums, incidentally, are all polysaccharides, meaning they're made of long chains of sugar molecules, just like the familiar corn snot and fruit snot, cornstarch and pectin. The following are the details of this study. For those of you who don't care about the details, you can skip ahead to about
the 10-minute, 20-second mark,
where I'll give an executive summary. The authors grew cultures of several strains of the genera Lactobacillus and Bifidobacterium, Lactobacillus rhamnosus, salivarius, Plantarum, Acidophilus, and Paracasei, and Bifidobacterium, longum, and lactis. They were cultured in MRS broth, then concentrated down to about 10 million colony-forming units per milliliter. They say colony-forming units instead of a simple word like cells, because they only want to count specifically the cells that are still healthy enough to grow up into normal colonies when they're put into a culture plate later. MRS stands for Deman, Rugosa, and Sharp, the names of the authors who first published the recipe for this culture medium, which is specifically tuned for growing Lactobacillus species. If you're a real microbiology nerd, next time you have to mention growing lactic acid bacteria in a report, you'll remember to cite the publication. It is Deman, J.D., Rugosa, M., and Sharp, M.E., quote, "A Medium for the Cultivation of Lactobacilli," unquote. 1960, Journal of Applied Bacteriology, Volume 23, pages 130 to 135. Each of these cultures was then mixed into 3% solutions of each kind of snot, 3 grams of dried alginate, guar gum, locust bean gum, xanthan gum, and carrageenan powders, each mixed into 100 milliliters of water. Then they mixed each of those into 600 milliliters of vegetable oil with a milliliter of polysorbate 80 to help it mix. They shoved the whole mess through a kind of super science high-pressure nanotechnology Play-Doh fun factory device called a microfluidizer, which squeezes the mixture through tiny little holes at high pressure to mix them up. The idea here is that the watery bacteria-loaded gums won't mix well with the oil, and you end up with them formed into tiny little droplets like the ones you see when you shake up oil and vinegar dressing, only much smaller and hopefully all pretty close to the same size. Once that was done, they added calcium chloride and stuck the samples in the fridge to solidify. The calcium ions apparently get in between the long stringy polysaccharide molecules that the gums are made of and help the strands stick together, which makes the little beads harden up into little bio-boogers. While they were at it, they also kept unencapsulated cultures to use as controls for their experiments, so that they could tell how their experiment compared to unprotected bacteria. As a bonus, they also made up a batch of this stuff with a fluorescent dye instead of bacteria, a dye called 6-carboxyfluorescein. That way they could do a separate test to see how slowly small molecules like the dye would leak out of the gum. Okay, still with me? Congratulations, you've survived the complicated part. The rest is just testing. The simulated stomach acid was MRS broth, brought down to a pH of 2 with extra hydrochloric acid. The simulated bile was a substance called taurocholic acid, mixed in with MRS media. Taurocholic acid is a main component of bile. They mixed that in at a rate of 3 grams per 100 milliliters. Samples of each encapsulated culture and unencapsulated control culture were added to each of these, and then tested every 30 minutes for 2 hours to see how many bacteria were still alive. The bonus test with the fluorescent dye was just a matter of dumping samples of the dyed bio-booger material in water for 2 weeks and then checking to see how much of it had leaked out. Finally, as tradition demands, they took their results home in the form of a bunch of numbers to make pretty graphs and charts on their computers with. The authors give detailed tables and graphs showing their results, which you can find in their paper if you're interested. In summary, the seaweed snots, alginate and carrageenan, and the bacteria snot, xanthan gum, all showed substantial ability to protect the bacteria from stomach acid and bile.
Most of the bacteria in these materials were still alive at levels of around 10 to the 7th, that's 10 million, colony-forming units per milliliter after 1 hour, which the authors cite from a 1998 paper as the concentration necessary to be useful as a probiotic supplement. The bean snots, guar gum and locust bean gum, didn't do so well, though they still did better than the unprotected bacteria. Alginate, xanthan gum, and carrageenan also leaked a lot less dye in the 2-week dye leakage test. Now, for those of you too busy berating your chauffeur for distracting you while driving you around the city in your gold-plated Hummer H3 limo, here's the short version. The researchers here have taken several kinds of common food thickening ingredients and mixed them with healthy food bacteria to make itty-bitty little capsules of live cells, in the hope that the thickening ingredients might keep healthy yogurt bacteria alive in the harsh environment of people's guts long enough for the bacteria to be beneficial to the eater. They found that alginate, xanthan gum, and carrageenan all worked pretty well for this, but that guar gum and locust bean gum weren't really that helpful. They also demonstrated that other water-soluble sorts of substances also tend to leak out more slowly in the same three thickeners that protected the bacteria best. Some of you might be thinking what most of the population thinks when they hear what's in a scientific publication. So what? Who cares? Well, I'll tell you who. First, anyone who eats food and has a digestive system. This study's results appear to be useful, practical information for development of healthier foods. To add my own speculation to what the authors actually discuss, it looks as though this technique could also be used to more effectively carry other nutritious substances or perhaps medicines into your digestive system. I'm definitely not a medical scientist, but I still might suggest that this encapsulation technique might be turned into a comparatively pleasant alternative for the very effective but somewhat disgusting medical treatment known as fecal transplant. Having spent enough time by now talking about snot and boogers already, I'll spare you the details, other than to say that, yes, it is a real and legitimate treatment, particularly for certain bacterial infections of the digestive tract, and it really is more or less what the name suggests. You can find the details online if you really want them. Another population who might care about this research is made up of molecular gastronomes. For those of us who went to public school, that's a fancy way to say food nerds. The encapsulation technique describes sounds like something that I could feasibly use myself. I may not have access to a grotesquely expensive device like a microfluidizer, but I can certainly get my hands on a French press and a blender. For purposes of home food experimentation, I suspect that'd be good enough. And in any case, I would hypothesize that the larger bio-boogers resulting from the simpler equipment might resist stomach acid longer anyway. Hillbilly Biotech, in my kitchen. It's more likely than you think.
And there you have it, in all its wet, floppy glory. You can tell me how bad this episode sucked, either at hackerpublicradio.org or on the blog I've got dedicated to my HPR contributions at hpr.dogphilosophy.net, where you'll also find a page with an updated list of topics that I'm thinking about doing one of these days, so you can tell me which ones not to do because they're stupid. Seriously, though, while you're at it, think about topics that you know about that someone else might want to know about, and consider recording a Hacker Public Radio show about it as well. HPR needs and wants more contributors, so please join in. If I can do it, I'm pretty sure you can, too.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.
When you're kissing with your honey, and your nose gets sort of runny, you may think it's funny, but it's not.